All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hello and welcome to the Real Sober Mom Chats on the Sober Mom Life podcast. You guys know these stories are near and dear to my heart. These are stories from women who are in the Sober Mom Life community, in the Sober Mom Life Cafe. And for a lot of them, it's the first time telling their story. These are real moms. It's like the Real Housewives, but without the booze. Don't forget, if you want to share your story, come and join us. We now have 2 options for memberships. We have the Sober Mom Life community. For $5.95 a month, you get to connect with sober and sober curious women all day long in the chat and in the feed. And then you also get access to our Tuesday peer support Zoom meeting at 11 a.m. Central. And also the cafe. The cafe is $25 a month and you get so many meetings. You get access to 8 weekly peer support meetings plus our monthly book club. You get your own feed and chat where you get to connect with the ladies and just so many other amazing things. Come and join us. We would love to have you and enjoy the Real Sober Moms. Ashley, welcome to the Sober Mom Life.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, you said you've been listening for a long time, and now you get to be on it.
I know.
And I'm excited.
It's almost like that, like, what do they call it? Like fangirl moment where, like, you're just listening to somebody, like, all the time, and then once you actually get to talk to them, you're like,
yes.
Hi.
Or, like, when you listen to a podcast and you only hear the voice, mm-hmm. right? It's so weird to then see the face. I'm always like that. Like on Instagram, I'll look up my favorite podcasters and be like, oh my God, it's so weird to see the voice coming out of the face.
And you're real.
Great. Yes, real. Oh my God. Well, I'm so glad you're here and I'm excited to hear your story and where you're at with sobriety, but you know the deal. Let's go back. Let's talk about alcohol and where that began.
So pretty much around the age of 14, my mom started, single mom, parents divorced at two. So doing the best she could, she kind of got into the mommy wine culture a little bit. So I made a decision that I would never drink ever because
I
was exposed to it and there was a lot of hurt there. So I was like, I'm never going to be like her, never doing that. So I actually made it until 21 until I took my first drink. I worked in the restaurant industry since I was 16. So I finally got promoted to be a bartender when I turned 21. And it was like love at first sip.
And that restaurant industry, man, like, because I was a bartender too, it can be a lot. It can be a lot of drinking, a lot of partying after hours, like you stay and then you go out, right?
And that's how it happened because I started bartending and I wasn't a drinker right off the bat. So the girls didn't accept me and even told the manager, like, why would you let her in the bar? She doesn't even drink. She doesn't even know how to recommend stuff. Like, they just absolutely were very clear about being angry that I was in the bar, basically. So my response, being the people pleaser that I am, was, okay, then teach me how to drink. So I got deep into that life of going out every night, drinking. I remember even, I think it was like within my first couple experiences of alcohol, I took out like half a bottle of Rumplemints. And
oh my God, Rumplemints.
For those people who don't know, it's 100 proof. And yeah, it took a while to be able to use toothpaste for a while.
Yes. That like mint. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was that. It was like Goldschlager. That was like the big Oh, totally. You're taking me back.
Yeah. Okay.
And you were fine. Like you didn't have to go to the hospital or anything.
I should have. I threw up for a solid 5 days after doing that.
Ooh. Yeah.
But you know, I just thought I'm young. I drink a lot. Like I'll get over it. But I'm pretty sure at least a few times in my story, there's some alcohol poisoning that should have gotten help. So I pretty much just took on that lifestyle. I bartended for like the next 2 years, I think, just drinking 5-6 nights a week, going out. I had no kids at the time, so got to do whatever I wanted and fully lived up that lifestyle. I was that one that everyone was recording because they were doing stupid stuff, dancing on tables, taking off clothes. Like that was just a total attention seeker.
And then you see
seeker.
Those videos, like then you watch the videos of the next day that's the worst.
If I saw one now, I would probably be like, please, children, never.
Right?
Hopefully they never see something like that.
But I know. What year was this? Was there social media?
So I'm pretty young. I think I turned 21 in 2016 or 2015.
Oh, you are such a baby. Okay, so there was social media.
Yes.
Right?
I think so. I think
God.
It was like just starting to be big. But yeah, I got so caught up in that lifestyle. And I've always been the type who wanted girlfriends and wanted to be accepted. And this was getting the attention. So I loved that. And I knew that if I drank and went out and acted like this, then people liked me and people wanted to invite me. So I got really caught up in that for quite some time.
Like the fun party girl.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I made other people feel better about their drinking because I was so crazy. So they liked me there because I was the bad one. It started to get to a point where it started to affect. I went to college right out of high school. So I'm almost at the end of my bachelor's at this point. And my drinking got so bad, I actually dropped out of school and just stopped showing up to class because I was too hungover to go all the time. So I dropped out of college and was still bartending. And I got to a point of like, what the heck are you doing with your life? Like, this was not in the plan. This is not where you thought you would be. So I just randomly decided to join the Navy and left a couple months later. Yeah.
Okay. This sounds like, did you listen to Kelly's story?
I did.
Okay. You did?
When I heard her, I was like, yes, there's another one.
Yes. Oh, wow. Okay. So you wanted order. You wanted to escape this kind of party lifestyle. And so you were like, yes, I'm going to do this.
Yes, that's exactly what I was seeking, was like the order and the kind of getting your life on a narrow path type of thing.
Yeah.
So I left in January, graduated boot camp in March, and then was stationed in Pensacola, Florida during the summer.
Okay.
So you already know where this is going.
Yes.
I got paid to drink on the beach every night and every weekend. So many blackouts, so many days not remembered, so many bad decisions. I didn't come home until August. So from March to August, it was pretty much just blackouts. I don't even know how I graduated the school there.
And it was like the situation where everyone was doing it, right? Because was it kind of a party hard at night situation?
That's just the Navy in general. Like, the military is known for their drinking. That's kind of all there is to do. You know, when you go get stationed in other countries, like, you don't have your family there. You don't have stuff like that. So all you do is you go drink with your friends. And it really, like, bonds you drinking like that. So, and on base, not to mention, Fireball was my poison of choice. And the shots were a dollar. So.
On base?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's like drinking on, I guess, I don't know, you guys, you already probably know this, but I don't know much about the military because I was never in it. So you drink on base, actually.
Yes, it's way cheaper.
Really? Mm-hmm. So is this like active duty when you're, I don't know.
Pretty much every base that I have been to has a bar, some form of like club or bar.
Wow, that's kind of wild, right?
It is very encouraged. You are weird if you don't drink in the Navy.
Wow. And what was your role? Like, what was your role in the Navy?
So I do IT.
Okay.
So I was at ITA school at the time, just learning IT, which I don't know how the heck I did hungover, because that's some crazy stuff that you learn. And I did it hungover.
And like, you have to use your all of your brain that you can. Yes. And not to have it, right? And to be hungover and to, yes. Wow. Okay.
And it just kind of became normal to like wake up, throw up, and go to class.
Yes.
So that just kind of became life for a while. And then I think it was late July. So just a little backstory. During the summer, I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house with all the cousins there. We all just like spent weeks at a time with each other. So my cousins were the closest thing I had to siblings. I'm an only child other than my step siblings. So they became my siblings and we grew up so close. So come this July, I get a phone call and it's in the middle of the day. And it was from my dad, who we don't really talk on the phone. So I knew something was wrong. And my grandpa was at an elderly age. So I assumed he was calling to tell me that my grandpa had passed. So I answer the phone and he tells me that my cousin committed suicide. And this is a brother to me. So I immediately like drop to the floor. Can't believe it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I did not know how to process it. And coming from already the alcoholic background, that's what I used to grieve. Mm-hmm. And my drinking got the worst that it ever was in these couple months. And I actually had to come home. I was supposed to go to a C school, but I ended up coming home in August because I just couldn't. I just got way too deep in drinking, started getting suicidal, taking on like the real effects of the depression side of alcohol, and just not properly grieving. I came home and went right back into bartending, exactly what I was trying to get away from.
But it makes sense, right? It's what you knew. And I'm very well aware of grief and had to deal with it and still deal with it because I don't think it ever really goes away. And when people turn to alcohol when they're grieving, it just makes so much sense to me because grief is so hard to feel. And this idea that alcohol will help, right? When we're told that it will help with everything, even though it's a lie, it does make all the sense in the world. So I hope you have compassion for yourself as you look back and say like, oh, wow, like it was just too much.
Yeah. And that's exactly seeking the numb.
Yes.
Was the type of drinker that I was all along was numbing out. And so this happens and perfect opportunity.
Right. Exactly.
So I kind of got pretty suicidal at this point coming home. I think we're probably at October at this point where I had expressed multiple times to my boyfriend at the time that I was living with that I just didn't want to be here anymore. I got put on some antidepressants, I think, which wasn't functioning at this point, just a shell of a person.
And when you did, I'm always interested in the conversation with the doctor. Like, did they ask about the alcohol use? Did they connect that?
Not at all. But my mom, so she's a nurse. And she's the one that brought it up. She said, like, hey, just so you know, you're drinking, like, alcohol does cause depression and anxiety. And it came from my mom. So, of course, I rolled my eyes at it. And I was like, yeah, okay, mom. Like, right. No, it's just something off in my brain with my depression. So she said, well, then please go see a doctor. Like, I care about you. And it would break my whole world to lose you. So she took me to the doctor, got some antidepressants, and I was never once asked about alcohol or if there were anything else.
Even though it was your mom, right? And you rolled your eyes and like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's interesting that it still comes up today. So it was a seed. Like she did link it for you. And I think that a lot of times, you know, whenever I ask, like, did your doctor ask you? When I ask that on Instagram and people are like, well, I feel like if they did, I wouldn't, either I wouldn't have told the truth or I wouldn't have listened. And my answer is always right. Probably not right then. You're not going to say, oh, I didn't know that. Let me stop. But it's a seed. Mm-hmm. And the idea of not saying something is far more dangerous. And it calls into question the do no harm thing. And so, yes, you roll your eyes at your mom, but it's still then it goes, you store it away, you file it away.
Absolutely. I look back now that I'm sober and think about how many times she had that talk with me and I just rolled my eyes at her. And so I try to remember that when I'm helping somebody else get sober of they don't want to change unless they're ready to change.
Right. And that it's still in there. It mm-hmm. sticks. Like even if it's not the catalyst, the only catalyst for change, it is that like little stepping stone. So, and at that point, was your mom drinking or had she stopped?
No. So she, like me, cares a lot about what people think. And I used to go to something called Children of Addicts in high school. It's like AA, but for children who are on the end of the alcoholic. And I went to that while I was in high school and she found out about it and was mortified that people knew her business or that I had to go to something like that because of her. So she immediately stopped drinking. And she's not sober. She'll drink a margarita for Christmas or something, but she drinks maybe once or twice a year.
Oh, wow. So, oh, that's interesting that that's why she stopped.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for it, but so my young adult life, she was, for the most part, not a drinker.
Oh, that's great. And so then you were back bartending, you got on antidepressants, and how was that?
So it didn't really help because I was drinking so much.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to explain to people now is they do counteract. So here you are thinking like, oh, these just don't work for me. Well, no, you're making them not work by your drinking.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting on antibiotics for something. And between the drinking, I don't really know what happened, but I ended up getting pregnant. Obviously not planned.
Yeah.
But I look back now and he saved my life. Yeah. I was at such a low point between suicide and drinking. And here comes this miracle that's going to make me stop drinking for the next 10 months. So I had 10 months to kind of process my grief and learn how to quickly become a mom at a young age. I think I was 24 at the time. And he comes and I thought, you know, he healed me and I was going to be okay. And unfortunately, I got right back into my drinking. I still worked at the restaurant through all of this. So I bartended at a restaurant. So you can sit at the high tops if you're a child. So I ended up bringing him with me to drink after work, or my boyfriend, who's now my husband, would bring the baby to the bar and we would just drink there because it's a restaurant. Nobody's going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
So that continued. Unfortunately, I justified it because I was so young. Like everybody does this. Just because I'm a mom now doesn't mean that I don't get to do it too. And I think maybe a few times it got to the point where we shouldn't have been driving with him. But for the most part, you know, I was always putting him first in trying to control or moderate my drinking so that I could still take care of him. And I look back at those times now, and those are one of those moments that you talk about where it's hard to bring up because there's so much shame there looking back on it. But I know it had to be a part of my journey. And my husband's one of five, so he always knew he wanted a big family. I'm an only child, so we're trying to meet in the middle. But we ended up getting pregnant with my daughter shortly after that. They're only 22 months apart. So we got pregnant with her, and same thing. I didn't drink while I was pregnant with her, but then as soon as she was born, I got postpartum anger and anxiety. Mm. So my solution for the anxiety was to drink because it brought me down. So I became really wrapped up in that mommy wine culture of I've had a really hard day and I'm really anxious, so I'm going to come down with this wine. And not to mention, she was born June of 2020. So right when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
So I was grieving this like not normal bringing a newborn home lifestyle where nobody could be in the hospital. Nobody could come meet her in the hospital. Nobody was allowed to come meet her once we brought her home. I couldn't take her out. I couldn't ask for help. Nobody could come over
so to help hard.
Me. So just battling all of this.
Impossible. Impossible. This is where I always say we need to stop and think about what we've been through, right? Mm-hmm. And you having a newborn and a toddler in a global pandemic, not knowing what the hell is going on, how to keep our family safe, all of the things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also at every turn being told alcohol is here to help.
Exactly. And it did its purpose. It numbed me out and it took away the anxiety temporarily. But then, you know what we know about it, the next yes. morning you wake up 10 times more anxious.
And the so shame, it's just a vicious right? cycle. And mm-hmm. the shame, like, ugh. I mean, I've said it so much and I don't think I could say it enough, is that shame that alcohol just brings along with it is just the most corrosive and it's so hard to feel. And yeah. so then it makes sense that it's a cyclical thing and then we drink so that we don't have to feel, right?
Yep. I ended up getting a job on base somewhere in between there of after my daughter. I didn't look at it as a problem at the time. But I was drinking during work hours. I worked with some young people my age, and during lunch, we would go drink and then come back to work. And we thought it was awesome because we were relaxed at work and it was kind of normal for us. And if somebody would have told me I had a problem, I would have been like, what are you talking about? We're just young. Like, this is just right. what young people do.
And so it was working its way, right? Because it's highly addictive. It was like slowly working its way into more and more of your life. And it's interesting now, like when you're not drinking, to look back with clear eyes and see it. But when you're in it, there's so many ways to justify and validate, right? And say like, I'm not drinking at work. I'm not at work. I'm at lunch, right? And like, especially if you're not the only one doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the progression that we talk about.
Yeah.
Like you don't think it's going to happen to you and think like you're always going to drink this way. It is progressive.
Yes.
That's the way
and it's
the
not a weakness
works.
In you, right? Right. That's the substance. Alcohol is highly addictive. If it's in your life for an extended period of time, you are only going to want more. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is.
Yeah. So pretty much just got wrapped up in that mommy wine culture and I decided I didn't want any more kids. So I started working out heavily, trying to get the body of my dreams or however you want to say it. But I was still drinking. So I couldn't go to I used to work out at 5 a.m. and I couldn't go to half of my classes because I was hungover. But I never like clicked the two that I always just thought if I drink differently, if I switch to beer, if I switch to wine, or if I switch to vodka with soda, like if I switch it up, then I'll learn how to not be sick in the morning. Or if I drink more water, then maybe I won't be sick in the morning. I tried it all.
Yes. Or like you just didn't eat enough, or I have to yeah. drink water in between, like something that you are doing wrong. And the idea of quitting for you was that it just wasn't an option, right?
No.
Yeah.
I've been always surrounded. My family drinks, my husband drinks, my friends drink. Like, how could you live in this world where you're the only one who doesn't do what's normal? That was just absolute insanity to me. So we got to learn how to fix this because that's not an option.
Yeah, you just have to conquer this thing. You just have yeah. to do it better. Just drink better.
Oh, yeah. I look back now at the insanity. Like, I hate to say it, but when you see people in it now, I just wish it could give you like a peek of the other side so you can see like how crazy it is that you're trying so hard to moderate. And moderation is exhausting. It's a full-blown mental battle to try to moderate. It's a daily thing that you have to keep in your conscience of like, okay, how many have I had? Okay, am I allowed to have another one? Or what do I have going on tomorrow? Am I going to be sick tomorrow? It's just this constant head battle that you keep yourself in. It's exhausting.
It's the worst. And the idea that they still think that quitting drinking is like giving something up, right? Mm-hmm. And they're holding so tight onto this thing when you know that if they just quit, they would gain so much.
Oh, like, yeah. I remember seeing on your channel recently, like, this is the type of thing where you're either in or you're out.
Yes.
There's no middle ground.
There's no middle ground. And I think that that's, you know, that's something that big alcohol puts on us to be like, no, you manage it. Like, this has nothing to do with us. Our hands are clean. We told you to drink responsibly. And it's like, yeah, but that's a lie. Like, you yeah. knew that it's not possible. Like, smoke responsibly. Like, what? It's just not possible.
And I get so mad at it now. I try not to blame like just alcohol because we have a part in it too. But this idea that moms are not strong enough to handle the daily life problems. So here's big alcohol targeting, like, and this should upset a lot of feminists, let alone like moms, women, everybody, of, hey, you mom, you're not strong enough to handle parenting. You're not strong enough to handle your day and everything that you have going on. So here's this magical substance that you can have instead that'll solve all of your problems. But it's okay that you're not strong enough. Like, we're here for you.
Yes. And also, we don't want to hear what you need. Like, we don't want to hear how you feel and what you need. Are you kidding me? Like, no, you're too needy. Drink this and be quiet. That way we don't have to hear it and we don't have to deal with you. Mm-hmm. And instead, you'll just be addicted to this thing and you'll be a numbed out zombie. And it's like, wait, hold on. I don't want to do that. Okay, so what happened? Tell me more.
So I decided I didn't want more kids because it was kind of getting in the way of my drinking. Me and my husband used to fight all the time about who got to drink that day. We would go to like a family party or a friend's party or something, and one of us had to drive home and one of us had to be the coherent one. So we used to fight all the time over that because I want to drink. It's not fair that I don't get to drink too. And that crazy insanity. So we're just, let's see, I'm working for the Navy, and then it kind of, honestly, my last 6 months of my drinking are like vital to my story because that's when stuff really started going downhill. I've always been an alcoholic drinker. I've always been a binge drinker, but the last 6 months really show like how bad things get progressively. So you go on base 1 or 2 weekends a month and then 2 weeks to 4 weeks during the summer. So I go on my summer, what we call AT, and it's to Hawaii. So,
ooh.
I was supposed to go and be on an exercise 12 hours a day, no time to do anything while I'm out there. But instead, they found out that I had the clearance that I have, and they pulled me into what we call the skiff. The hours were working hours from 8 to 2 every day. So I got from 2 p.m.
Those are good hours.
Exactly. So I was released at 2 p.m. every day and weekends to just go do whatever I wanted in Hawaii. So, of course, what do you do when you're on the beach? You drink.
Oh, and isn't that another thing that sounds absolutely insane when you're like from right now?
Oh, yeah.
Being sober, Ashley, being like, oh my God, I had time in Hawaii and I drank it away, right? Mm-hmm. Like yeah. All of the things, you're like, you're going to numb yourself in Hawaii. But of course, when that's what you do.
The whole idea of pina coladas on the beach and this like vision that we have, and it ruined my whole experience out there. Like, I wanted to go hiking. I wanted to do all this stuff. And the girl that I was with kind of did the same thing. She was a mom of two. So for us, this is like full-blown vacation. We get to drink. And I breastfed my daughter to a year. So I had just stopped breastfeeding earlier in the year. So it was like, it's game time. Like, let's drink. Let's party. I don't have my kids. No responsibilities. And I forgot to mention, I got married in between my son and my daughter, which I don't remember the wedding. That is, if you ask me what my biggest regret is, during my drinking, it is that I was not present for my wedding.
Yes, I feel like there's a lot of this. And we were talking about this in the cafe that we need to have like a wedding shame meeting because I think that this is the thing. I think there's so much pressure. We forget to eat all of that stuff and we drink a lot. And it turns out to be mine was the night before my wedding. And so then I felt like shit when I woke up my wedding that morning. Yes, I think it's a thing.
It is. And it was pushed at me. So my family, I'm in California, and it rained really bad that year. Some mudslides took out a city in between here and Santa Barbara. And my family's all in Santa Barbara. So they couldn't get to my wedding. So only half my guests showed up.
No.
So here I am about to walk down the aisle when they tell me, and I started like having a panic attack. And so they were like, here's some alcohol. It'll calm you down. And I hadn't drank yet that day because I hadn't eaten in 2 days.
Right.
So, of course,
yes.
One drink is all it took, and it just went downhill from there.
Oh,
we're going to redo it someday, though.
Oh, there you go.
We've already talked about it, where I want to do some vows, actually.
Yes.
Present, so
oh, that's
someday.
A good idea. Yeah.
But I was married going into Hawaii, and while I was out there, this is really hard to talk about. This is my number one shame that got me into the rooms, but I did do some things while I was out there to hurt my husband and made some mistakes. Not as bad as it could have been, but I still broke the trust between me and my husband while out there. And I didn't tell him. I came home and tried to pretend like nothing happened. And that started eating me alive bad. I was not a daily drinker. I was somebody who drank maybe a couple, because I did two under two. So it was so hard to drink as a mom. And they're very demanding early in the morning. So being hungover was not an option. So I kind of got in the habit of only drinking on weekends or only drinking when I knew I had help. So after coming back from this trip, I kind of became a daily drinker. And I was still working from home because of COVID. So I started going and drinking on my lunch. And I never, ever... because if you would have asked me if I ever would have been an employee to drink on the job again, I would have told you, like, you're insane. That'll never happen. And here I am because of COVID. Like, nobody knows where I am, or they just know that I'm getting my work done, but they don't need to know where I am every hour of every day. So I would go down the street to a restaurant bar and have a couple beers and then come home and do my afternoon meetings and stuff. And I actually thought of it as like a badge of honor that I could be buzzed and nobody knew. I thought that was so cool that I could hide it so well. And I wore it as a badge of honor, and like just having that come out of my mouth. It's like so crazy, the insanity. So it was like starting to go downhill. And then we have people over all the time. So we had some friends over one night, and my daughter was jumping on the couch and she fell off and like right onto her head. And all of us had been drinking, so nobody could drive or anything. And I thought, like, what if she has a concussion? Like, should we take her to the hospital? Like, nobody can drive, so we would have to call the ambulance, and that's expensive. We don't want to deal with that. So I was like, you know what? I'll just stay up with her and look for the signs of a concussion for, like, the next couple hours. And I woke up the next morning realizing that I fell asleep as soon as I lay down with her. And that, to me, was just the ultimate, like, what kind of mother are you? Now alcohol is starting to seep into, like, what kind of mom you are. So now you're a bad wife, a bad employee, and a bad mom, like something you swore you would never be. Like, I can handle the rest of the shame, but being a bad mom is a hat that I'm never going to wear. And so the fact that it was starting to seep into who I was as a mother, I couldn't live with that. And I started to tell friends and family, like, so this was about, let's see, my sobriety date's November 1st. So we're about probably September at this point, where I start like really talking about, hey, I think I might need to take a break and like learn how to have a healthy relationship with alcohol. So at this point, I'm really trying hard to moderate. Like, we'll go to a restaurant and I only have one beer. And then the whole rest of the time I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, I want another one. I want another one, but I'm not going to do it because I have to moderate. I already knew I had a problem, but in November and December, I had three weddings to go to, a Vegas trip planned, and all the holidays. So I kept telling everybody, in January, I'm getting my shit together. Let's just wait till January. I'm going to spend these last couple months like drinking and doing all that. And then come January, I'll do something to take a break and learn how to moderate better. So come October, my sister-in-law decided to do a backyard wedding like randomly, needed some help planning it. So I was so wrapped up in like helping her plan it and be present for it that I didn't drink that day. And everybody around me just got totally shit-faced. My husband, my whole family, like everybody was just wasted. And I woke up kind of angry the next morning that I didn't get to be involved in that. That was on a Sunday. And then Monday, I went back over there to help. I knew that they were all going to be hungover and throwing up and stuff. So I went over there to help. The company that picks up the chairs and tables was coming. So I was like, oh, I better go over there and be the responsible one and like pick up all the stuff. So I get there and they're all drinking like mimosas and micheladas and stuff to, you know, curb the hangover. And I was like, well, fuck you guys. Like, you got to drink yesterday. It's my turn. Like, you guys are going to take care of me today. And mind you, it's Monday. I'm supposed to be working. So I'm just here for like a couple hours and then I need to go back to work virtually. So I end up drinking three micheladas like right off the bat on an empty stomach and getting that buzz. And, you know, once you get that buzz, you keep chasing and chasing. Fast forward to like 2 p.m. and I'm seven tequila shots deep, like five micheladas, just totally wasted. And I realize I'm supposed to be picking my kids up from school right now. And I couldn't do it. So I had to call my husband, like super embarrassed, and be, hey, like, I know it's Monday and I'm supposed to be at work right now, but I'm drinking and I can't pick up the kids. And he immediately, you know, hung up the phone, was very disappointed, and ended up having to go get our kids. And he was very upset and wouldn't talk to me. And so he just left me at their house. And so I was like, okay, well, it's a party, like no kids, sure. So I just kept drinking and drinking, and it's nighttime at this point, and I ended up calling him 13 times to come get me. And finally at the 13th time, he's like, stop calling me, I'm on my way. And I don't remember the 12 before that, you know, to me, that was the first call. So I get in the car and he's just livid at this point, because he had to pull the kids out of bed to come get me and dealt with my drunk ass all day. So I get in the car, and the whole ride home is just this full blown lecture of like, why do you have to take it this far? Why do you have to drink like that? Like, why can't you just be normal? Why can't you have one or two? Why does it have to be like this every single time? And, you know, here I am sobbing. I'm like, I'm never going to drink again. He's like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, no, seriously, like, I need to stop. I have a problem. And I was going to go till January, but this is November 1st. And I decided that I was tired of feeling like that. And so I woke up the next morning and I was like, you know, I stand by my decision. I think it's time to kind of learn how to have a healthy relationship with this. And I wasn't going to stop at this point. It was, let's take a break and learn how to have a healthy relationship with it.
Yeah.
So I told him, I'm going to try it for 30 days. Maybe I can make it to a year. I don't know, but let's just stick to 30 days for now. And I'm going to publicly announce it so that it's the accountability for it. So I told my whole family and all my friends, like, I need this for at least 30 days. I have a very unhealthy relationship with alcohol, and I need to learn how to moderate. I need to learn how to have that one or two, of course, because, you know, just stopping, period, is out of the question.
Right.
So I make it the 30 days, and I just listened to your pregnancy episode. Like, when you know that there's an end date, it doesn't count because you're counting down to something.
Yeah.
So I get to this 30-day mark, and I'm like, okay, like, I think I'm okay to drink again. And I realize I don't want one or two. Like, I'm chasing the feeling. And so I know that if I go drink right now, it's not going to be one or two, because I want to numb out. That's what I'm drinking for. So why would I want anything less than that? So I decide at that point that I want to start going back to church, and I want to put something in my life that's working towards a more positive me. And I go to church, and I get there, and I bump into somebody who I know has 10 years of sobriety from both drugs and alcohol. He used to be coming to the bar all the time and order water, and that's how we got to know each other, because he was always the guy that drank water. So I bump into him and I said, hey, like, I haven't drank in 30 days. And he's like, that's so awesome. Like, have you been to a meeting yet? And I was like, no, I'm not an alcoholic. I just need to learn how to moderate. And he's like, yeah, okay. Like,
right.
There's the church does a meeting on Wednesday nights, and I think you should go to one. And he's like, just try it. If you don't like it, you never have to go again. And I'm thinking, like, I don't have a problem, but I have a hard time saying no to people. So I was like, he's like, I'll go with you. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, I'll just go to satisfy.
Right. For him.
Him. For
yeah.
Him, you know?
Yeah.
So I get there and I sit down, and I don't know anything about AA. I've never been to AA. And I sit down and I'm like looking for him the whole time, and the meeting starts and he's not there. And I just start freaking out. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know how this works. Like, you told me you would be here with me, and you never showed up. And so I'm, you know, like, I'm already here. If I leave now, it's going to catch people's attention, and it's going to be embarrassing. So I sit through the meeting and I start to hear people's stories that like really relate to me. And there's a group of women like off to my right who look just like me and who are normal looking. And you always picture the alcoholic as like,
right.
You always say the homeless person under the bridge with the paper bag. Like, that's who you think is the person with a problem. So I'm hearing all these stories. These people are doctors, lawyers, mothers, fathers, like just normal people who let this substance, you know, get the same way that I did. And so I feel really comfortable in this meeting, like listen to these people. And at the end, they say, if you want to seriously do this, and if you want to stay sober, you need a sponsor. And that's the only way that you're going to do this, is to work your 12 steps and get a sponsor. And so here I am thinking, well, I want to be held accountable by somebody, so maybe I should get a sponsor. Like, I don't know how it works, but it sounds like somebody who's going to hold me accountable. So I end up getting a sponsor, and we start to work my steps, and stuff got really uncomfortable. And I have a lot of childhood stuff that I drank for, a lot of hurt there. And I've always been an emotional drinker, somebody who was just seeking that numb out. You know, they say you're either trying to get away from something or running towards something when you drink. And for me, every time I got to numb out and get away from the internal battle that I was carrying. So we start to work these steps and some of that starts to come out. And I like to mention, I've been in therapy my whole life and I've never gotten out of therapy what I got out of my 12 steps or working the steps. It's such a different approach to it. And it really, really stripped me raw of what was really going on inside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, AA is not for everybody, but for somebody like me who drank emotionally to get away from my childhood, it's so vital, I feel like, to do some kind of step program or some kind of, like, even with a therapist, like deep, deep healing inside, or else you're going to pick back up, because that's why I drank, was to get away from that. So it took me about a year to work my steps. So that kept me sober for the first year. Once we were done, she's like, okay, now you get to sponsor. And I was like, no, me? Like, what the heck? Like, did you not hear my story? Like, I'm not a very good person. Like, I don't feel like I should be leading another woman through these steps or anything. And I ended up getting a sponsee, like, fall into my lap somehow. And, you know, now I've walked her through the steps and just giving back in the program. And now I'm at a point in my recovery where I've been seeking more. I don't think I'm going to stop going to AA just because those are my people. And the best way I can describe it is, I've always felt like a black sheep in, like, this crowd of white sheep, and like, you just don't fit in, you don't belong. And then you step into these rooms and you find your herd of black sheep. And it's people who know hurt. It's people who know where you've been, why you're there. And no matter what you mention in a meeting, somebody always relates to it. Like, these are your people. So I don't think I'll ever let go of that, but I'm kind of at a point in my recovery where I want more out of giving back. So that's why I started listening to podcasts and reading books and just trying to get more out of what I can do to help the next person get sober.
Yeah.
So May 1st, I'll have 2.5 years. So.
Oh my gosh. Ashley, like, you shared your story so beautifully. You have me captivated. And you are helping women. Like, I hope you realize that this step that you've taken to share your story will help so many women who, you know, think that, like, ugh, maybe quitting isn't an option. I just have to drink better. And while you're thinking that, the substance is doing its thing, right? And progressing and all of that. And so, and I love, you know, even though I'm not in AA and I, you know, I don't see myself going, I think this perspective is very important because I never want it to be, it's only this way. It's never this way. I always want a lot of different perspectives and different ways to sobriety. I want those highlighted. So I'm glad that you shared your story and that it includes AA and that when you sat down in that room, you felt accepted and welcomed. And I think that the most important thing is to talk about the moments that we feel the most shame about and to really, as I say, like, make eye contact with it and say, like, no, you know what? I can feel this. I am strong enough to feel this and to face this, and I will use it to help me go forward. And you did that. And you could just tell, like, you're so wise in your journey and everything that you've been through. And I'm just so happy that you came on here and shared and talked with me. And I'm honored that I get to hear it.
Thank you. And I love what you're doing. I think that's what first attracted me to the podcast, is that you give that other option and you don't have to claim that you're an alcoholic. And I don't even enjoy calling myself that, because honestly, I have lots of addictions. I have a shopping addiction. You know, if you really want to put a term to it, like, I feel like I'm more of an addict because I just chase the dopamine rush. It doesn't have to be alcohol. I just need something to, like, get me going. And so it gives that different perspective that maybe AA may not be for everybody. It worked for me because of the trauma, but, you know, not everybody has that. Not everybody needs that. And one thing that I do differ from the program is it's a very you're the problem kind of program.
Yeah.
Versus, like, here's this substance that we're not even supposed to be consuming as humans. Right. And it's addictive and it's destroying, but you're using it wrong. You know, like you said in the beginning,
yes,
it's your fault. Like, you have a disease. And if you didn't have that disease, you'd be able to do this normally like everybody else. So then the alcoholic holds on to this perspective that there's this normal person to strive to be. like me, like I just need to learn how to moderate. I need to learn how to be that normal person. And so we hold on to this of I'm broken and I have a problem. And if only I could learn how to be this person, then I could use it correctly.
Right.
So you're always striving. Like you, that's the, where the relapse comes in. That's where the trying to be normal comes in, because we still have this idea that there's a normal way to do this.
Yeah. And we have this idea that alcohol is the hero, right? That like without it, we're missing out. And like, oh, well, we lost this privilege, right? And it's just not that. I'm so glad you came on here and shared your story. And just thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
Addiction impacts all of us. Addiction's consequences run through all of us. From ourselves to our loved ones and through our communities, addiction creates so much loss and grief. My name is Dwayne Osterlin, and I'm the host of the Addicted Mind podcast, a show featuring personal stories, expert guests, and vital information about addiction and addiction recovery. We'll talk with leading treatment providers to discuss the latest research and treatment options for this devastating disease and advocate for mental health awareness. We discuss topics like the importance of creating a community of support to helping loved ones, to some of the latest research on psychedelic medicines. The Addicted Mind podcast has been about creating hope, listening to stories of many amazing people that have overcome addiction and are thriving. If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, subscribe to the Addicted Mind podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or check out theaddictedmind.com. New episodes every Monday. See you there.